knows about Prabhupada, but I have noticed that when devotees describe about their personal experiences with Prabhupada, that seem to have a different kind of appeal. I was very fortunate to have the association of Srila Prabhupada. Although I joined the movement very late, I actually joined in 76 and I met Prabhupada in 77. So although I met him very late, Prabhupada, after that, Prabhupada was present on this planet only for about another 10 months. But I was very fortunate to be with him for all that period, and to come to that point, how I met Prabhupada, I'll just briefly describe what I was doing. I made up my mind to take to spiritual life, and I was looking for a guru, but unfortunately in India I couldn't find anyone who I could surrender to or who I could accept as my spiritual master. Everyone seemed to be falling short of my expectation. So then at one point of time I almost gave up any hope of finding a bona fide spiritual master. So when I gave up that hope, then I came across The Nectar of Devotion. I got this book from Calcutta Temple and I went back home and I began to read the book. And when I began to read the book, then I felt that this is what I was looking for all this while. That this is the real path. Because prior to that, I did not have the personal concept of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It was more of an impersonal approach. And obviously, I was frustrated. But when I began to read this book, The Nectar of Devotion, right from the very first page, it became clear to me that Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we all are His eternal servants, and unless and until we become situated in His service, we all become miserable. So, and I found the book so interesting that I just kept on reading till I fell asleep. And then when I woke up in the morning, the first thing I did was to pick up the book and start reading again. And this way, when I was reading the book, I made up my mind to become a devotee. I was picturing myself in my mind's eye that I was a Hare Krishna devotee, I shaved up, I was in Vrindavan, and because Nectar of Devotion, this gives all the details how a devotee should lead his life. Stay in Vrindavan, visit the temples, associate with the devotees. And so I made up my mind, and when I made up my mind, I felt a great joy. I felt that now I won't have to worry about myself anymore. I won't even have to worry about my spiritual life. It is all up to Krishna, and let Krishna decide what He wants to do with me. And I felt very peaceful inwardly. And then I found out that Prabhupada was not in India at that time. He was in America. So I decided to travel around the places where Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes. And then when Prabhupada came, I would surrender to him. And the next night, actually, I had a dream. I dreamt of Srila Prabhupada, and although I saw the pictures of Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion, and other places also, Calcutta Temple, and Back to Godhead magazine that I took also. So, I had a dream, and I saw Prabhupada, there was a halo around him. Prabhupada was sitting on something like a throne. Of course, those days I didn't know what a Vasasana was, because in India, generally the sadhus don't sit on big seats. And so I couldn't really relate to what that was, but at that time I thought that Prabhupada was sitting on a throne, and there was a brilliant halo around Prabhupada. He was not only a halo, he was effulgent. And as soon as I saw him, I felt that now I found my spiritual master. And that was it. I didn't ask him any question. And although it was a dream, but it was very vivid, as if I was very awake, but it was, I was not seeing with my eyes. So, so I decided to travel around the places where Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes till Prabhupada came back. And thinking that, the first place I went to was Mayapur. And when I went to Mayapur, it was in the evening, and it was Sandharati was going on. I just arrived there. And the devotees were very nice to me. Like, whoever I spoke to, everybody invited me to stay and be one of them. Stay in the temple and become one of them. It was, although it was not so direct, but it was quite obvious that they were inviting me to become a devotee. And Mayapur, of course, those days was quite different. It was not, we didn't have so many big buildings, and it was just the main building, that main temple building, and the wall, or the small rooms on the walls. And we didn't have so many devotees also. It was, there was about 20 Western devotees and maybe about 30-40 Indian devotees. And of course, nowadays we don't have so many Western devotees, but those days Mayapur had a lot of Western devotees, and it was a very nice, closely knit atmosphere. And we were, so this, and actually devotee meant Western devotees. Not many high class or educated Indians joined at that time. And the Indians, those who were there at that time, they were mostly weavers. We had that weaving setup, and some Bangladesh refugees came and took shelter of Prabhupada in Mayapur. So there are the Indian devotees, and mostly it was just Western devotees. And so all these Western devotees were asking me to stay in Mayapur. And so the next day, next morning, I had a talk with Shatadhanna, and Shatadhanna was very much pushing me. Very sincerely, not pushing, but he was persuading me that you have tried so many things in your life. Why don't you try this? Become a devotee. And then I felt that, yes, I made up my mind already, and now that they're inviting, might as well stay. So I just went down and went to a barber and shaved my head. And I got a dhoti and a kurta from the shop. There used to be a shop, devotee shop, in front of the kitchen. And went to the Ganges and had a bath and became a devotee. And actually, when I became shaved up and put on devotee clothes, everyone in Mayapur got very surprised. And because they didn't really expect that I would join like that. And then I had to wait for a few months. But in the meantime, I got involved in so many different things, so many different activities in Mayapur, because there were so few devotees and there was so much to do that immediately I was sucked into all kinds of activities. Like, and the service that I got stuck to, I mean, I got involved in was buying materials for the long building. That long building that you see in Mayapur now, that building was being constructed at that time. So I used to help Pancharatna Prabhu in purchasing materials for construction. And at the same time I was doing some translation, and also at that time I started one work. I found some old articles of Prabhupada from 45 to 56 or so. And I collected all those articles and started printing a book. And then Prabhupada came back to India. And first Prabhupada came to Bombay. And one day I told Bhavananda Maharaj that I wanted to... This was to Bhavananda Maharaj. I told him that I wanted to go to Bombay to see Prabhupada. And he completely discouraged me. He said, what's the point in going to see Prabhupada in Bombay? As it is, Prabhupada is very sick now. Nobody can actually see Prabhupada. And even if you go to Bombay, you won't be able to see Prabhupada. So better to wait for Prabhupada to come to Mayapur. And when he comes to Mayapur, then you'll get to see him as it is. And so I was so involved with so many things that I could not, I also felt that I can't dissociate myself from these responsibilities. So I stayed back, and then after a few weeks actually, Prabhupada went to Allahabad for Kumbh Mela. And we also went to Allahabad to meet Prabhupada there. We were about 50 devotees, a full bus load. We rented a bus and drove to Allahabad from Mayapur. And we had also some devotees from Mayapur and the whole group of Namhat. Those days we used to have a sannyasi called Guru Kripa Swami, who had a big collection group. They used to peak in Japan and all those countries, and they were really big. They used to give a lot of money to Prabhupada. Called a lot of money to Prabhupada's projects. So Guru Kripa's whole party, and we went to Allahabad. And so when we arrived there, it was in the afternoon, and in Allahabad, in Kumbh Mela, there are thousands and thousands, what thousands? Actually millions of people assembled there. And that year 4 million people came to Kumbh Mela, and they all were staying there. And there was nothing, it's all flat bank of Jamuna and confluence of Jamuna and Ganga. And but they built thousands and thousands of tents. And we had a pretty big area covered by corrugated tin sheets. And there we had tents. And then there was one big tent for Prabhupada. And that tent was all walled so that nobody could go in there. And so I felt that I would wait till the evening, and in the evening when Prabhupada would give darshan, then I would go and see him. So, thinking that, I was roaming around in that area. So at that time, Bhavananda Maharaj was going to Prabhupada with he brought some vegetables from Mayapur. So with a basket full of vegetables, he was going to see Prabhupada. And he saw me on the way and he said, come, let's go and see Prabhupada. And I was very happy. And so he took me by the hand and we ran together to Prabhupada's tent. And so when I came in front of the tent, then I saw Prabhupada was inside. And from outside the tent, I offered him obeisances. And in the meantime, Bhavananda Maharaj went straight into the tent. And so when I got up after offering obeisances, then Rameshwar Maharaj, he was Prabhupada's secretary at the time, he informed me that Prabhupada was taking prasad, so I shouldn't go in now. So I just went out. And but when I stood up, then I saw that Prabhupada was looking at me. So anyway, I just folded hands, I offered obeisances again and walked out. And that evening, Prabhupada was giving darshan. I was little late in coming to the tent, and the whole tent was packed with people. There were so many devotees and so many outsiders. There was practically no room to go in. So I somehow squeezed in between the last row and the tent. I was half sitting, half kneeling against the tent. And for a long time I didn't hear what Prabhupada was saying. All I could hear was my heart was beating very heavy. I could hear only the sound of my heartbeat. And because just seeing Prabhupada was such a wonderful experience. And especially after waiting for so long, I was... And then after a while, I just noticed that so many people were asking Prabhupada questions. There were many outsiders, they were asking different questions to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was just answering those questions. Like, it seemed like those people were shooting arrows at Prabhupada with their questions. And Prabhupada, very easily, he was waving those arrows aside by his wonderful answer. And at that time, I remember one encounter that was very, very remarkable. there was one Indian man, middle-aged businessman maybe. He asked Prabhupada, why aren't you renovating these old temples instead of building new temples? You're building these new temples, but there are so many old temples, so why don't you repair them? So Prabhupada didn't answer directly. He asked him, who is that lady sitting next to you? So that man, he was a little taken aback and he said, she's my wife. Then Prabhupada asked him, why did you get married? And this man got completely flabbergasted. So he said, he couldn't say anything actually. Yeah. Then Prabhupada told him, putrarthe kriyate bharja, one gets married in order to produce children. One accepts a wife in order to produce children. So why produce children when there are so many children loitering in the streets? And then Prabhupada came to the point that the way you want to have your own child, the same way devotees like to have their own temples to offer to Krishna. So this way Prabhupada just made the point and, and everybody started to laugh loudly when Prabhupada made this point. Another encounter I remember very vividly from that darshan of Prabhupada. There was one Bengali man, young man. He asked Prabhupada why he is not doing service to people. Yeah, he asked Prabhupada what Prabhupada was doing for the sake of people. And this man asked the question to Prabhupada in Bengali, but Prabhupada answered him in Hindi. And Prabhupada just kept on blasting him. Just, Prabhupada just was so heavy. And so, each time this man would say something in Bengali and Prabhupada would just answer in Hindi. And he just kept on blasting this man, saying that, what is your understanding of helping people? What do you know about helping people and how you are helping people? And Prabhupada was saying that these people, those who say that they are helping people in the name of helping people, they simply gratify their senses. They are not helping people. And Prabhupada was so heavy. And at one point this man asked him, that why aren't you answering me in Bengali? Why are you speaking in Hindi? But Prabhupada didn't pay any heed to that. He just kept on blasting him in Hindi. And I could see, I actually felt a little bad. I felt that this man is never going to come to our temple. This man will never become a devotee. Because Prabhupada blasted him so heavy. And also I could understand that Prabhupada was saying in Hindi because Prabhupada wanted to make the point clear to everybody present there. Because there most of the people were Hindi-speaking people. It was Allahabad is actually a Hindi-speaking area. And strangely enough, after Prabhupada left this planet, this man became a devotee. One day I saw him in Mayapur, he became a devotee. And I was simply feeling that he's so unfortunate that he could have joined at that time and got the association of Prabhupada, but instead he missed that opportunity and he came so late when Prabhupada already left. Anyway, so this way Prabhupada was giving darshan and it was so exciting, like seeing Prabhupada was like literally seeing the spiritual sky and hearing from Prabhupada was literally hearing the transcendental sound vibration. And many, many important people came, many films, movie stars and big businessmen, they all used to come to see Prabhupada. Because Kumbh Mela is a big, big fair, spiritual fair. And I remember the next morning, Prabhupada was sitting outside and we had the Guru Puja outside the tent. It was very cold at that time in Allahabad. Very, very cold. And we had the Guru Puja outside and one devotee was leading the kirtan, and so it was a fired up kirtan, very enthusiastic. After all, so many devotees were there. Very fired up kirtan. And then at one point, this devotee started to sing, Bhajo Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. He just used the expression, he added Bhaja, like Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya. And Prabhupada just stopped the kirtan. And Prabhupada asked him, where did you learn this Bhaja? Where did you learn this Bhaja Hare Krishna? Did you ever hear me singing Bhaja Hare Krishna? And Prabhupada just chastised him for about 5 minutes. And he was very heavy and he told that never add anything to the Maha Mantra and never subtract anything from the Maha Mantra. Sing Maha Mantra just as it is. No addition, no alteration. And actually that is the time Prabhupada changed from, we used to sing Bhaja Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda before, but Prabhupada instead of Bhaja he changed it to Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya. And so that was another very remarkable experience I had. And it was, as I said, it was very cold, but Prabhupada was translating still at night. And it was a big fair, so there were a lot of shops and many business things. They would play play movie songs in a blaring loudspeaker, and that used to disturb Prabhupada very much at night. So one morning Prabhupada decided that he would go to Calcutta. And so Prabhupada said, and so that means Prabhupada wanted to leave as soon as possible. So all the big leaders were making arrangements, and Prabhupada could not fly. Prabhupada's health was not very good, so he didn't want to fly in a plane. So he decided to go by a train, and an arrangement was made. We got a whole carriage, railway carriage for Prabhupada, and 14 devotees were included in the group to travel with Prabhupada, and by Krishna's mercy, I was also included in that group. And I felt very happy and maybe a little puffed up also that I have been included in that group that was traveling with Prabhupada. So at night, the train left, and so we all went to sleep after a while. After the train started to move, we went to sleep. And next morning I woke up and I took my bath and I was chanting. And so in the meantime, Bhavananda Maharaj just came out, and he came to the compartment where I was in, and he came and told me, "Come, I'll take you to Prabhupada." So Prabhupada was just another compartment and one compartment away from the compartment I was in. And so at that time I felt that I'm not quite prepared to meet Prabhupada. Although all this while I was dying to see Prabhupada, but when the time came, I was kind of feeling withdrawn. Like in the evening darshans and morning darshans, although I was going to see Prabhupada, I never asked any question. I was simply listening all the nectar, trying to drink all the nectar that was coming from Prabhupada's mouth. So here Prabhupada was just one compartment away, and so Bhavananda Maharaj could understand my feeling probably. So he just grabbed me by my hand and dragged me through the corridor and opened the door of the compartment and pushed me in. And so as he pushed me in, I fell flat on the ground with it in the dandavat. And so when I got up, I saw Prabhupada was looking at me, and so Prabhupada asked me to sit there next to him. Like in the Indian trains, in the first class compartments, there are two seats facing each other. In the West also it's same, facing each other. Now in one seat Prabhupada was sitting, and on the other, Bhavananda Maharaj, Jayapataka Maharaj, and Rameshwar Maharaj were sitting. And Abhiram Prabhu, who was the temple president of Calcutta at that time, he was sitting on the floor. So I told Prabhupada, "No, Prabhupada, I'll sit on the floor." Then Prabhupada said, "No, you can sit here." And so I was hesitating. Prabhupada said, just he insisted. So there was a blanket or cushion on the seat, so I rolled that up and sat in one corner. And so Prabhupada asked me what I was doing, and then I told Prabhupada what I was doing. Then Prabhupada told me to translate his books into Bengali. And that's the first instruction I got from Prabhupada, to translate his books into Bengali. And then actually I asked Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, can I translate? Shall I be able to translate rather?" And Prabhupada said, in Bengali, Prabhupada told me, "The way one becomes an expert dancer by dancing, and the way one becomes an expert musician by playing musical instruments, The same way by practice you'll become perfect. So, and anyway, so this way there were some exchanges for a while, and then after a while, Harisodhi Prabhu, he brought Prabhupada's breakfast. So we left Prabhupada's compartment. And then when we came to Calcutta, Prabhupada stayed there for 3 days, and it was very nice. It was like a big festival, like thousands of people would come to see Prabhupada and interview Prabhupada, and I was always hanging around around Prabhupada's room. Like, I remember evening time, Prabhupada would give darshan, but when the aratik would begin, then Prabhupada would tell everyone to go to the aratik. And although everybody would leave the room, but somehow under some pretext, I would just stay in that room. And Prabhupada would not say anything. But I remember one day I was little, those days, you see, I had a different kind of concept of a sadhu, being an Indian. Sadhu, I thought the sadhu is a person who never touches money and so on and so forth. So I was in Prabhupada's room, and when everybody left, Prabhupada picked up that pranami plate and he was counting the money. So then I was thinking, in one way I was thinking that why Prabhupada is counting money. But then I thought that, well, I should not try to understand the activities of a pure devotee. And so this way I was checking myself. At that time I realized that whatever Prabhupada did was perfect. Only our misconception of spiritual life or inability to perceive the spiritual platform doesn't allow us to see the perfection that Prabhupada displayed. And in one such evening, I asked Prabhupada whether he would give me initiation. Actually, prior to that, I used to be very afraid, that because once I had a dream, and in the dream I saw Prabhupada, but I saw Prabhupada turned his face away from me. He was looking somewhere else. And I felt that as if Prabhupada is withdrawing his merciful glance from me. And I felt that as if Prabhupada is not going to give me initiation. So with great anxiety, I asked Prabhupada whether he would give me initiation. And then Prabhupada said, yeah, sure. During Mayapur, I'll give you initiation. So I was very happy. And at that time, after staying in Calcutta for 3 days, Prabhupada decided to go to Bhubaneswar. And I actually could have gone with Prabhupada if I wanted to. But at that time, I was printing a book. The articles that I collected from different magazines, Prabhupada's articles, I was compiling all those articles in a book. So I thought that I would, instead of going to Bhubaneswar, I would stay back and finish the book printing. And when Prabhupada would come back, I would offer him the book. So, and Prabhupada went to Bhubaneswar. He stayed there for a while. And then he came back to Mayapur. It was such a wonderful feeling, like the whole place was literally throbbing with joy that Prabhupada was coming. And so Prabhupada came, and I remember everybody was jumping and dancing, and devotees were throwing flowers from the top, and Prabhupada got out of the car, and he just, with that cane in his hand, he walked very majestically to the temple. And then he went to the room And so Prabhupada was there, and every evening he would give darshan. He would sit on a bench in the garden in front of the temple, and devotees would come sit around him. And local people also would come and sit around him. And Prabhupada would give darshan. So then one day I was away to check out the printing. The books in Calcutta, actually, to get anything done is very, very difficult. Like this book, although I was literally sitting in the printing press for months together, but still this small little book with 64 pages was not out. Like only when I'm there sitting there, they would work. And as soon as I would leave, they would start doing something else. So, the book was not ready as yet. So one day I went to Calcutta to check out the book printing. And next day when I came back, then some devotees told me, Prabhupada was asking where you are in the evening. They said, you are so fortunate, Prabhupada remembered you. Prabhupada asked, where is that boy? And so next morning I went to see, next day, I mean, after coming back, I went to see Prabhupada sometime in the morning. Then Prabhupada asked me, where were you? I said, Prabhupada, I was printing a book, and so I went to Calcutta. Prabhupada asked, is the book ready? I said, no. And he said, then what's the use of going there? So, then after, I think the next day or 2-3 days after that, one day I was having a shave. Like those days in Mayapur, we used to stay in the long building, and we used to take bath on hand pumps. There were about 7-8 hand pumps, and there was a cemented area, and we would just take our bath there. And the barber was shaving my head. So in the meantime, Bhavananda Maharaj came, and he said that Prabhupada, he told me Prabhupada wanted to see you. And so I somehow finished shaving, had a quick shower, and I ran to Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada asked me, do you know how to write Hindi? I said, yes, Prabhupada, but my handwriting is not very good. Prabhupada said, doesn't matter. No, that time I didn't say my handwriting is not so good. I was, when Prabhupada asked, do you know Hindi? I said, yes, Prabhupada, I know Hindi. Because I was eager to do something for Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada said, okay, so take these letters. And then he told me how to reply those letters. And he said, so you reply these letters. So I took those letters, and they were in Hindi. So I answered them, brought them back to Prabhupada, read them out to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada signed them. And so he gave me some more letters. So this way, the second day when I brought the letters to Prabhupada, Prabhupada told me, so from now on, you will become my secretary for Indian affairs. And he asked me to move into his secretary's room. At that time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was the secretary. And so I was with Tamal Krishna Maharaj in the same room. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was also very nice and friendly in the right from the beginning. Then during initiation, Prabhupada very mercifully gave me the first and second together. And then after a few days, Prabhupada was leaving for Bombay. And in the meantime, I had some very nice experiences. At that time, Prabhupada was quite sick, and one day he, Harisori Prabhu was Prabhupada's servant, so he actually wanted to get somebody else to serve Prabhupada, and he wanted to actually retire from the service, and he felt that I was a good candidate, so he was pushing me. That was actually before Prabhupada gave me the asked me to be his secretary. So so one day Harisori asked me, do you know how to cook? And I said, yes, yes, I know how to cook. So he said, why don't you cook for Prabhupada? So I said, yes, I'll try. Actually, those days I didn't really know how to cook. I mean, I had some experience, like when I was in the West, I would cook sometimes some Indian food, but they are, I mean, all kinds of inedible stuffs, and they're also not at all Vedic by any chance. So then Harisori went and told Prabhupada that I could cook, and Prabhupada said, okay, so let him cook then. And but when I entered into kitchen, I felt that, my God, I mean, I am not at all qualified to cook for Prabhupada. And I realized that I don't really know how to cook. And so, at that time Prabhupada's sister Pishima was there. So Pishima was a very good cook. So I went and told Pishima, you see, Prabhupada asked me to cook, but I don't really know how to cook. I don't know what to cook. So why don't you please help me? So Pishima said, fine. So she came to the kitchen, and so she practically cooked everything. So after cooking, I took the plate to Prabhupada's room. So Prabhupada started to eat it, and then he asked, who cooked? So I said, Pishima cooked. So Prabhupada was very upset. He said, I asked you to cook. I didn't ask your Pishima to cook. And he was very annoyed, and he told me to take the plate away. So I didn't know what to do, but Prabhupada just insisted, take that plate away. And he wouldn't take it. So then I had to take the plate, and I was feeling very guilty, and I felt that, oh my God, I offended Srila Prabhupada. And so then, yeah, so that happened before that I missed. I thought of, I just remembered it. And another thing that was very significant, at that time Prabhupada had Prabhupada was displaying some kind of sickness in his body. And one very good Ayurvedic doctor came to see Prabhupada. And this Ayurvedic doctor was actually an acquaintance of Prabhupada. And he was actually the biggest Ayurvedic doctor in Calcutta. But he got involved in politics and he became a member of parliament. And so his practice, his Ayurvedic practice was completely gone. And so at that time this man was very old. He was so old that he became blind. But still when he got to know that Prabhupada became sick, so he came to see Prabhupada and treat Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada told me to take care of him also. So I would take care of him. And this very nice man, his name is Bimalananda Tarkutirtha, Dr. Bimalananda Tarkutirtha. And so he would come to Prabhupada's room. I would actually bring him to Prabhupada's room in the morning, and he would check Prabhupada, and then he would, he and Prabhupada would sit together and talk for a long time. So one day Prabhupada was telling him about his past life. is telling that how when he passed, when he finished his college, he didn't want to take up a job. He wanted to have an independent occupation. He felt to take up a job is a Sudra's profession, so he didn't want to become a Sudra. So he was trying to sell shares in share market, where companies have shares, and Padmanabha Prabhu, probably you know what it is. Why? Share market? Vihaisa? Auction? No, not auction. No. A share. Say, for instance, Siva Gaigi, yeah, or Mercedes. They, this public limited companies, they send out their shares, and shares fluctuate. Sometimes share goes up, goes down, and anyway, Prabhupada wanted to. Prabhupada was, so in the share market. In the share market, and but Prabhupada's father had a friend called Dr. Kartik Bose, and so one day Dr. Bose came to Prabhupada's house, and those this Prabhupada used to write, and he had some writing. I don't know, Prabhupada didn't describe what it was. He wrote something, maybe some small articles or a poetry. So Kartik Bose read that. It was lying, the diary was lying on the notebook was lying on the table. So he opened it and he read it. And he asked Prabhupada's sister, who wrote this? So she said, it is Prabhupada who wrote that. So Kartik Bose told her to tell Prabhupada to see him. So when Prabhupada came back, Prabhupada's sister told that Kartik Bose wanted to see him, or rather wanted him to see him. So Prabhupada went to see Kartik Bose, and Kartik Bose asked him, what are you doing? So Prabhupada said that he was in the share market, selling shares. Then Kartik Bose said, that is not a dignified job. He said, why don't you join my company? He had a pharmaceutical company. So, but Prabhupada refused. Prabhupada didn't want to take up a job. So, then Kartik Bose went and told Prabhupada's father. And Prabhupada's father persuaded Prabhupada and told him that, look, this is not taking up a service as such. It's not taking up a job. It is like family business. Kartik Bose is like your uncle, and it's his company. He wants you to join this company. So what's the harm? So when Prabhupada's father persuaded him, so Prabhupada joined this company. And Kartik Bose right away made him the manager of that company. And Prabhupada was just a young man, fresh from the college, and there were so many experienced people in the company, they got very envious. Prabhupada was telling that they would not cooperate with him and tried to do all kinds of things with him, because they could not tolerate that such a young boy became their boss, came from nowhere and just became their boss. And not only the employees, but even the directors of the company, they also were very surprised that Kartik Bose appointed such a young man for such a responsible position. And in the board meeting, they told him also, told Kartik Bose, why did you appoint such a young man as the manager of the company? Then Kartik Bose replied, I didn't appoint him because of his age, but I gave him that position because of his efficiency, because of his ability. So Prabhupada was saying, and soon enough they all realized that Kartik Bhosh's judgment was very true. And so then after a while, Prabhupada's father wanted him to get married. So his father, in India, when you get married, not you, but when somebody gets married, the bride's or the daughter's parents send out pictures, and actually daughter's parents make the negotiation. It is actually the custom that the boy's family receives the many proposals from the girl's side. So when Prabhupada's father wanted Prabhupada to get married, he got lot of proposals from different people. They wanted their daughters to become Prabhupada's wife. So finally Prabhupada's father showed Prabhupada two pictures. The one girl was very beautiful, and the other girl was not so beautiful, and told him, so you decide who you want to marry. And then said, you would naturally like to get married to this beautiful girl, but if you want to take my advice, then I would suggest that you get married, you don't marry this beautiful one, you marry this other girl. Because if you get married to this beautiful woman, then you'll become very attached to her, and you won't be able to advance in spiritual life. So Prabhupada took his father's advice, and he decided to marry this less beautiful girl. So Prabhupada got married, and then after a while Prabhupada met Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Prabhupada had a friend from the Mallik family. Malliks are very well-known families in Calcutta. And so this Mallik met a sadhu, and he came and told Prabhupada to come and see this sadhu. He said that I met a very wonderful sadhu, and I want you to also meet him. But Prabhupada didn't want to meet any sadhu at that time, because he didn't have any faith in so-called sadhus of India. They are just in the garb of sadhus, most of them are just cheats or foolish people. So Prabhupada said, no, I am not interested. And then this friend kept on insisting, no, you must come. This sadhu is different. He is not like others. So being persuaded by him, Prabhupada went to meet this sadhu, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And so as he offered his obeisances and got up, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, you all intelligent, educated people, you should take up the responsibility of preaching Mahaprabhu's message all over the world. So at that time Prabhupada opposed to this instruction of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, saying, unless and until India becomes free, nobody will have respect for Indian culture. So first of all, we have to free India. Those days Prabhupada was involved in Gandhi's non-violence movement. So that's why he said like that. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, Mahaprabhu's message is not dependent on India's freedom or dependence. Like Mahaprabhu's message is transcendental, and India's political condition or economical condition has nothing to do with Mahaprabhu's message. So this way he convinced Prabhupada that Mahaprabhu's message is the most important thing and that must be spread all over the world. But then when they were going back, so his friend asked him, Prabhupada's friend asked Prabhupada, "So, what do you think of this sadhu?" So Prabhupada replied, "Now, the responsibility of spreading Mahaprabhu's message has come on to someone who is going to do something about it." So that was Prabhupada's prediction about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And so Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, although Prabhupada at that time did not become a full-time devotee, but Prabhupada became very obsessed with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's instruction to him. And he felt that he should dedicate his life in propagating the message of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But he was a householder, a service holder, so he felt that as long as he is working under somebody in a job, his time actually belongs to that man, so he doesn't have the time. So he decided to quit from the job and start his business. So one day he submitted a resignation letter that he was going to resign. So Kartik Bose became very upset. He called Prabhupada and said, "Why do you want to resign?" So Prabhupada said, Prabhupada told him that he met a sadhu, a great person, and he told him to spread Mahaprabhu's message. So he decided to act according to that sadhu's instruction. And now that he has his service, he doesn't have the time. So he decided to have a business so that his time will be his time and he will somehow maintain his family through that business and he will dedicate himself in fulfilling the instruction of that sadhu. So then Kartik Bose told him, "Why do you want, okay fine, if you want to start your business, so you take up the soul selling agency of my products in North India." So he gave him the soul-selling agency of his pharmaceutical products. So Prabhupada accepted that and he went to Allahabad and he started a business, pharmaceutical business and the agency of Kartik Bose's products. And so this way Prabhupada started a new phase of his life. And there again in Allahabad again he met some of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples and then he accepted initiation from him in 1933 and then in 1936 Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur left the planet. But before leaving the planet, he told Prabhupada that he should print books with whatever money he gets and must try his best to preach in the Western world. So this instruction was very deeply rooted in Prabhupada's heart and he was always meditating on how he was going to fulfill the instruction of his spiritual master. And also there were a few other things. Anyway, instead of going into the details, then Prabhupada was telling him that since then he was trying to come to the West and preach Mahaprabhu's message. And he was telling that those days I used to think that I would make a lot of money from my business and then with that money I would go to the West and start preaching. And he says that that was what I was thinking, but Mahaprabhu, when the time came, he sent me to the West as a pauper, as a person who has no money at all. But he gave everything that was needed. And whatever I needed, he provided. Men came, money came, everything came, and so many temples have been built. And so he was telling that actually this is my Guru Maharaj's mercy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy that it has been possible like this. And actually Prabhupada was telling that Mahaprabhu proved it, that his message will spread just by his own mercy. No, that Mahaprabhu's message does not depend on any material condition. It is not that only when we have a lot of money we will be able to spread Mahaprabhu's movement. What it needs is earnest sincerity, and Prabhupada, in his own life, Prabhupada has proved it. And then, so this way, Prabhupada, I had the good fortune to listen to this narration from Prabhupada's own mouth. He was telling Bimalananda Tarkatirtha. So another wonderful incident I remember from that time was Prabhupada was... I told Prabhupada that I wanted to learn Sanskrit. And Prabhupada said, why do you want to learn Sanskrit? So I was telling Prabhupada, because I want to do this, so I was giving reasons why I wanted to learn Sanskrit. Of course, none of the reasons were sound enough. So Prabhupada said, no. He said that we do not really make an endeavor to learn something new. Whatever we know, we simply use it in Krishna's service. Whatever we know, that just we use that. So there is no need to learn Sanskrit. And he said, there are so many Sanskrit pandits, but what's the use? What's the use of their Sanskrit knowledge? What actually matters is to become a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I was convinced. I decided, well, Prabhupada didn't want me to learn Sanskrit. Then Prabhupada told me, you read my books and you will learn Sanskrit just by reading my books. And then after that Prabhupada said, you know Sanskrit. And I kind of was very surprised, because I did learn some Sanskrit in school and I had a teacher to teach me Sanskrit, but that was practically nothing. And I couldn't understand why Prabhupada said that. I was fumbling. I was saying, well, Prabhupada, yes, I learned something in the school, but that is not enough. But Prabhupada didn't say anything. Then one day Prabhupada was having a talk with this doctor, Bimalananda Tarkatirtha, and Prabhupada was discussing with him about the age of Kali. And then Prabhupada came to one point where he wanted to read something, find out something from the 12th canto. So Prabhupada asked me to get the 12th canto from the next room. So Prabhupada had this Sanskrit Srimad Bhagavatam. So he asked me to get the 12th canto, so I got the 12th canto. So Prabhupada asked me to get certain chapter, so I opened the chapter. Then Prabhupada says, okay, now read. And so I just kept on reading loud. And I couldn't believe my ears myself. when I came to that point where that shloka that Prabhupada wanted, Prabhupada said, yes, that's it. So Prabhupada recited that shloka and made the point to Bimalananda Tarkatirtha. Then after Bimalananda Tarkatirtha went back to his room, I was alone with Prabhupada in his room. So Then Prabhupada asked me, "So where did you learn Sanskrit?" And I didn't know what to say. I was just quiet. And then after a few days, Prabhupada wanted to go to Bombay. And so when Prabhupada was going to Bombay, Bhavananda Maharaj told me that I couldn't go with Prabhupada. I thought that I would go with Prabhupada and I was all ready. But he said, "No, you can't go to Bombay. There is so much to do in Mayapur, you must stay in Mayapur." So, and I was very upset. I thought, here I had this one opportunity to be with Prabhupada and now I can't go to Bombay with Prabhupada. But then I felt, actually Bhavananda Maharaj made me understand that Prabhupada will have many, many, others will be there to serve Prabhupada, so I don't need to go. And so the day before Prabhupada was leaving, Prabhupada asked me, "So are you coming?" I said, "No, Prabhupada." Prabhupada said, "Why not?" I said, "Prabhupada, Bhavananda Maharaj told me not to go." So Prabhupada didn't say anything, but then Bhavananda Maharaj came to me. Prabhupada must have told him. And he said, "So you pack up, you're going with Prabhupada." So I was very, very happy. So we went to Bombay, and in Bombay Prabhupada was supposed to stay in the temple, but in the temple, the new building, Prabhupada's quarters were not complete. So Prabhupada was very annoyed that his quarters were not ready. So, but Prabhupada said, "I will stay here. Even though it is not ready, I am going to stay here." Though there was cement all around, the windows haven't been fixed, but Prabhupada said that he was going to stay. But then the devotees told Prabhupada that there was going to be the program, Pandal program in Bombay city, and the temple is so far away, so it is better if Prabhupada stays in some life member's house. So then Prabhupada agreed, and the ultimatum was given that the Prabhupada's quarters has to be ready within 6 days or 1 week. And they were practically working day and night. They were actually 26 hours a day to finish that place. And so Prabhupada stayed in the house of one industrialist called Kartikeya Mahadevia. And they have cotton mills. Very nice man. And he actually vacated. He had a huge flat, very nice flat, right on the beach, and big apartment. And he just kept one room for himself. He had two daughters. He sent his daughters out to some place, and rest of the flat he just gave to Prabhupada. And we were four of us. With Prabhupada we are four of us. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Bhavananda Maharaj, Upendra and myself. So Upendra actually was asked to come to India to become Prabhupada's servant. And so Upendra joined us in Bombay. And so we were there and we had a beautiful time. Like Prabhupada would go to the evening program and would give a real wonderful fired up lecture, smash all the karmis, all the mayavadis and everything, and establish the points. And then he would come back. And when Prabhupada would come back, he would look so exhausted, because Prabhupada's health was not very good at the time. He was totally exhausted. So when he would come back to the flat, then I would massage Prabhupada's feet or his back, his head, give him a massage. And Prabhupada would ask me, "So, how did you like my lecture?" So I would say, "Well, Prabhupada, this is very nice." Then Prabhupada said, "So, tell me, what did you like so much about that lecture?" So I had to tell him what I liked. And now one day, I remember, Prabhupada asked me to read from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I was reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So each time I was saying, after translation, I was saying, "Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada," the way we read it out in the class. And each time I would read out, "Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada." So Prabhupada said, "Is that written in the book?" So, and then Prabhupada went to Bombay temple after the program, and Prabhupada's quarters were very nicely decorated. It was all ready. Only the lift was not ready. Lift was ready, but it was taking only Prabhupada up and down, but not for regular use. And it was very nice. Prabhupada's quarters in Bombay is beautiful, all very beautifully done up. And but Prabhupada's health was bad. And those days, Mother Palika was cooking for Prabhupada, and I was serving Prabhupada. She couldn't take the plate to Prabhupada, so she would cook and then she would make the plate, then I would take the plate to Prabhupada and offer it to him, and Prabhupada would take it and then I would bring the plate back. And so then one day Palika became sick. Oh yeah, before that one incident happened, that was also very nice. One day Prabhupada wanted to have some orange juice one morning. And in the kitchen there was no orange. Then I went down, so that means I had to climb down the 6 flights of stairs. Look around in the deity kitchen and devotee kitchen, and finally I think I got some oranges in the deity kitchen. But by the time I brought the oranges to Prabhupada's kitchen and started to make the orange juice, it was already quite late. So Prabhupada rang the bell. Prabhupada used to call us by ringing a bell. So that was fixed to Prabhupada's. Wherever Prabhupada used to be, we used to keep the bell so that Prabhupada could just press the bell and we would know Prabhupada wanted us. So Prabhupada pressed the bell, so I went in. Prabhupada said, what happened to the orange juice? I said, "Prabhupada, I'm just bringing it." So then I was making it. So it took some time. And so by the time I finished, I just about to finish, then the bell rang again, and this time the bell just kept on ringing and ringing and ringing. I knew that Prabhupada must be very angry. So I just picked up that glass, put it on a silver plate, and ran to Prabhupada's room. But when I opened the room, I heard something like a thunderclap. And Prabhupada was so angry, he just screamed at me. He said, "You take it away from here, I don't want it." And Prabhupada just told me to get out of the room. He didn't want that orange juice. He was so annoyed with me. And anyway, I couldn't go back. So I had no other way but to go forward. So with the plate in the hand, with it, and I just kept on walking towards Prabhupada's table. And step by step I went, and then I held it in front of Prabhupada. So at first Prabhupada didn't pick up the glass, and then finally he picked up, and he began to drink. So when he began to drink, then I realized that I didn't take the bowl of water to wash his mouth. So I just ran to the kitchen, got the bowl of water, and then I would hold the bowl of water to Prabhupada's mouth, and Prabhupada would take some water, and then he would spit it out after cleansing his mouth. And then I realized that I forgot to bring the towel to wipe Prabhupada's face. So I again I didn't go to the kitchen, I just ran to Prabhupada's cupboard. There were some napkins and small towels, so I picked up a napkin. And then I was wiping Prabhupada's mouth. And then when I was cleaning the table, and just picked up the plate with the glass and bowl and wiped the table, I was wiping the table. And Prabhupada said, You are trying to serve me so nicely, but I always chastise you. And he said, you see, when one becomes old, one becomes short-tempered. And so when Prabhupada said that, when Prabhupada blasted me, I didn't mind so much, I didn't feel so bad. But when Prabhupada started to speak like that, it was so heavy, I couldn't take it. And I just wanted to tell Prabhupada, please don't speak like that. But I felt my voice choked and I couldn't speak up. And then finally I told Prabhupada, please don't speak like that. I make mistakes and you correct me. If you don't do that, then what will happen to me? Then Prabhupada stopped, he didn't say anything. Then after a few days, one day Palika became sick, and another Mataji cooked for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada told her what to cook, how to cook. And so I brought, those days Prabhupada was eating only once a day. Only during the noontime Prabhupada would eat something, and the rest of the day Prabhupada wouldn't take anything. He couldn't eat anything actually. So I brought this plate of prasad to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would just take something and he would spit it out. And I was seeing that Prabhupada couldn't eat anything. So I asked Prabhupada, isn't the prasad alright? Then Prabhupada said, no, she doesn't know how to cook. And so I just told him, Prabhupada, should I try to cook for you tomorrow? Prabhupada said, yes, you can try. And so I was very happy. So the next day, next morning Prabhupada told me. I asked Prabhupada, what should I cook? Then Prabhupada told me, you get this, you get that. And then he showed me one preparation. That's called Bati Chachari. I prepared that yesterday. I don't know whether you have had that. Of course, the quantity was not very much. But Guru Shakti knows it was burning and he could sense it. So this is the preparation. It is cooked with, Prabhupada told me to cook it with potatoes and potol. Potol is some kind of small melon. You don't get them here. Those who have been to India, I'm sure you know what it is. It looks like a mridanga. It's small. And so Prabhupada asked me to get some potol and potatoes cut in certain shape. And then Prabhupada asked me to get the turmeric and red chili. So Prabhupada asked me to put red chili, put a lot of red chili. Prabhupada said, put more.
put more.
There was a lot of red chili. Prabhupada asked me to put the turmeric. I put a lot of turmeric also. Then Prabhupada told me, okay, now stop. He said, then Prabhupada asked me to get the can of mustard oil that we were carrying a can of mustard oil for Prabhupada's massage. Prabhupada used to have a massage with mustard oil and sandalwood oil. And so he asked me to get that can of mustard oil. Actually, he used to have the massage oil in a bottle, a small bottle with, mixed with sandalwood oil also. And so I got that can of mustard oil. So Prabhupada asked me to pour. And so at that time, Prabhupada was having a massage. So Prabhupada asked me to pour the oil in the pot. So I just kept on pouring. And I just kept on pouring and Prabhupada didn't say anything. And I thought maybe Prabhupada didn't notice. And I've already put so much mustard oil. So I just tilted it back and stopped pouring. And Prabhupada said, what happened? Why you stopped pouring? Just put more mustard oil. And so I kept on pouring and then a lot of mustard oil. And then he told me, now you put some water to the, that covers, just covers all the sabjis, all the vegetables. And then put it on the fire and the water will dry out and then there will be a sound, like chot, 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 chot. And so let it burn for a while. So when it is burnt, it will burn for a while and then you cool it and then you scrape it from the bottom. And so I mix it because the turmeric, so much turmeric will form a crust at the bottom. So I cooked it and I cooked few other sabjis. And I cooked a shukta, it's a bitter preparation. So Prabhupada liked the shukta and Prabhupada liked surprisingly Prabhupada liked all the preparations. And after I would serve Prabhupada would take the prasad. Then after wiping Prabhupada's mouth and taking the plates, I would bring the plate and wipe the table clean. And then Prabhupada would sit there for a few minutes. And then Upendra would come and take Prabhupada to the bed. And Prabhupada would take a little rest. So I was in the kitchen cleaning the pots. Then Upendra came running. He said, hey, what did you cook today? Prabhupada was all praise about it. He said, Prabhupada asked me whether I tried it. And he told me to try it because he liked it very much. And so Upendra tried it and then that evening, that at 4 o'clock, Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to come to Prabhupada and take dictations for letters. And Prabhupada told him also that he asked him whether he tasted the food I cooked. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj said yes, and Prabhupada was very happy that the prasadam was very good. So, but the next day I blew it. I cooked the shukta, the bitter preparation. It was not quite all right. It became a little too liquidy. And so when I served Prabhupada took that. That was the bitter preparation, was the first preparation you take. Prabhupada just took that. He didn't like it. And he said, what's the matter with you? So you don't have any standard. One day you will cook and I'll praise you and the next day you are gone. And so I was very worried and very upset that Prabhupada didn't like my cooking that day. Maybe I got a little puffed up and Prabhupada smashed me like that. Or Krishna smashed me like that. So then the next day I was thinking that today if I blow it, that means that there goes my service to Prabhupada. Actually all this while I used to desire very much that if I could cook for Prabhupada. Because I was with Prabhupada and I was doing different things Like, at 7 o'clock, I would take all the newspapers to Prabhupada and read them out to him. And then, after that, I would serve him breakfast. And then Prabhupada would like to see what I translated. I would read out the translation. Then Prabhupada would give me dictations of letters. So this way it was going on. I was hanging there all the time, but still I had more times that I could use in serving Prabhupada. So I was thinking that if I could cook for Prabhupada, it would be so nice. So I went, and the third day, when I went to the kitchen, all the time I was in great anxiety, and I was thinking that if I blow it today, I would be totally finished. And so in great anxiety I cooked and then served Prabhupada with my heart beating really hard and fast. And then Prabhupada took that, took different preparations, he ate it, didn't say anything. Then when he finished, I asked Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, was the cooking all right today?" And Prabhupada said, "Yes, today was all right." Then I told him, "Prabhupada, I was in so much anxiety all the time." Prabhupada says, "Good, when you are serving your spiritual master, you should be in anxiety." And so I think I stop now. But maybe tomorrow evening I'll continue again. Right? Because it's already 9:15. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.